Today, we're going to finish your Parakei of Pirkei Avos. We're up to Mishnah Chof Beis. The Mishnah here contrasts the Talmidim, disciples of Avraham Avinu, with the Talmidim of Bilam, which is an interesting contrast. Very simply put, it says that those who have the following certain traits are more like are disciples of Avraham Avinu, those of other traits, disciples of Bilam. The Talmidim of Avraham Avinu, Ayin Tova, Ruach Nemucho, V'Nefesh Shvela. A good eye, which we already spoke about, means a generosity. Ruach Nemucha is a certain humbleness of spirit. And Nefesh Shefala is kind of like, Nefesh Shefala, sort of a humble soul or a meek type of soul. And the opposite is Ayin Ra, Ruach Gevoa, and Nefesh Rechava. Those who have an evil eye, okay? Ruach Gevoa means opposite of humility, and Gaiva, arrogance. And Nefesh Rechava, a greedy spirit, as opposed to a lower type of spirit, in terms of not lower in a bad sense, but milder, calmer, meaner, meeker. Anyway, the interesting thing is of all why contrast Avraham Avinu with Bilam, of all people. I mean, because I thought an interesting comparison. We do have in the Parsha of Balak, which is where the story of Bilam is found, we do have that a comparison that Bilam was so eager to go do the will of Balak, and to curse the Jewish people, that says he saddled up his own donkey, he got up early and he saddled up his own donkey. And the pasuk is very similar to what says by Avraham when he went to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Akedah. So it says, the Medrash basically says, oh, you think you're going to go and curse the Jewish people because you get up early, you saddle your own donkey? You're already beaten to the punch. They're descendants of Avraham who did it. So there is some connection in the Midrashic sources between Avraham and Bilam. But nonetheless, it's an interesting it's an interesting comparison. I think perhaps one level of comparison may be, because after all, Bilam was a Navi who served the non-Jews, right? And supposedly his job was to spread the notion of there being one God and Son among the non-Jews. And he failed to do so because of his arrogant spirit and the midos that are mentioned here in the Mishnah. Avraham, in that sense, had the same task. Okay, in fact, it seems they lived in the same general area. We don't know exactly, but Aram Naharaim, Bilam is described as Ipsor Aram Naharaim, Ipsor Aram Naharaim, and Avraham Avinu came from there and so on. They lived in a similar world, and they both had some recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but used it in a very, very different way. And maybe that's why Avraham and Bilam are contrasted. Another thing is that it says Talmidim shall Bilam HaRosha. We don't exactly know who the Talmidim of Bilam are. Okay, who exactly the Talmidim of Avraham? Well, we're certainly descendants of Avraham. Are we Talmidim of Avraham? So the Mishnah tells when you have these characteristics, you're characterized as Talmidim Shal Avraham. But I think sometimes, and it's really in line with what we said previously in the previous Mishnah about the impact that you can have on some other people, sometimes you don't see a person's value or his legacy until you see, well, what kind of family did he produce? What kind of children does he have? And so on. And what kind of Talmidim does he have? You can sometimes tell a lot about a Rebbe when you see who his Talmidim are. You can see who, in other words, maybe this person doesn't stand out in so many ways that people notice now, but you see who his Talmidim are, how they behave, you realize there's something special about that person. So I think that's the idea also. Okay, Avraham Avinu, so we see what happened with the physical and the spiritual descendants of Avraham. Every person who converts to Judaism is a descendant of Avraham, Avraham on Goyim. And, it's and Bilam's Talmidim, whatever happened to him, we know Bilam met an unpleasant end himself. And, you see by how people, or who people produce and the legacy that they have, that's really a way to measure the person. It's not just Talmidim. It's when you see how people behave, just, there's a certain type of Talmidim you can tell, they learned by him, or they were influenced by him. It's a big subject. I think it's very important. The next Mishnah is the famous Mishnah of Yehuda ben Tema, which begins with, it says, Havi az kanomer, you have to be strong or bold like a leopard, kal kanesher, swift light like an eagle, rotz katzvi, run like a deer, and gibor ka'ari, lasos utzon avichas v'ashamayim. Okay, this is what the Torah begins with, citing this Mishnah. And I think it's significant because it's telling us that we can learn from everything. You can learn from animals. You can learn from the Gemara. It tells us also in Aaron, you can learn certain qualities from ant. You can learn certain qualities of modesty from a cat. You know, the different, you know, people have to be observant. You observe things in society. There are characteristics you can learn. It says even from animals. Okay, and I think that it's just a mission which tells us pay attention to what's going on around you. Pay attention. You can see certain things. You can see certain qualities. You know, you can learn from absolutely everything. We learned much earlier that the Chacham is someone who's lomed mikol adam. Well, this Mishnah takes it a step further and says not only lomed mikol adam, you can learn from every circumstance. You can see, you know, how people act in a certain way, how even people just going about their job, you can derive some sort of a mussar, some kind of a message. And as it says, even from the animals, you can learn. You know, a leopard is bold and so on. You have to be bold. And by the way, you know, going back to the previous Mishnah, so of course the Jews are known as Rachmanim by Shalom Gomei Chasam, but sometimes you have to be strong. You have to stand up to a situation. You have to be strong. You know, Kal Kanesher means light as an eagle. Now there's different ways to understand that because you know an eagle is a powerful bird. Okay, but this characteristic of being light, of being able to, you know, to move, to soar, I think that's, a person can do that in his life as well. Rotz katzvi, you have to run. Sometimes you have to do things in a hurry. There's people always in a hurry. By the way, every one of these meters can be a negative also, right? Az panim is a negative, you know, kal, that you can, you know, can soar and fly and you're light and so on, and, you know, that can be, it means you can push over, you can be blown over. So you have to be careful of that too. Ruts, because certain people are always in a rush. On the other hand, there are some people who are never in a rush. Nothing seems urgent. Everything's, you know, and it's sometimes you have to have a sense of urgency. And Gibor Kari, as strong as a lion. Again, you don't want to use the strength to bully, but all these things are lasos with Tzon Richo Shema Shemaim. But I think, as I said, the major lesson of this Mishnah is that a person can learn something just by observing nature, by observing things around them. You can derive a message. And the truth of the matter is, the next Mishnah, okay, is the same Yehuda ben Tema, Chavdal Zehuya Omer, okay, but he says sometimes these qualities, if taken in the wrong directions, are very bad. So, for example, it says, Az Panim, okay, a person has Azos Panim, a certain brazen type of behavior, chutzpah we'd call it nowadays, right? Az Panim Gehenim, Boshes Panim Gan Eden. Okay, a person who's Boshes Panim, it means, you know, he's ashamed, he can be embarrassed when he does something wrong. And then you have a very strange statement, which we quote all the time. What a strange, it's like it pops in here, and a lot of the freshmen wondered, you know, what this is doing here. Was this part of what Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema said? You know, did he say it? Others say no, because people suggest that this was stuck in here for some reason. I would say, if I had to come up with my own reason, it's because of the phrase "v'sein chalkeinu b'sorasecha." V'sein chalkeinu b'sorasecha. I've mentioned this in the past. Every person has a chelik in Torah. Every person can find something in Torah. I said this to Talmidim, in high school, when they were trying to encourage people to learn, during vacation and so on. It's got to be something. You can find a chelik. It's got to be a book. There's got to be some aspect. The Torah is so broad, okay, and there's so many different things you can find in it. Every interest, every realm of interest, of human interest, you can find something in the Torah. That's what I mean. You can find your chelik. You can find your portion. You have to look for it. So after describing certain midos, okay, and after describing, as I said in the previous mission, you can learn from looking around, you can apply that to your Torah, and you'll find your chelik. Okay, some people, of all the midos that are mentioned, Az and Kal and Gibor and Riley Vat to Ruts, okay, these are things which different people can be skilled at or different people can develop because personalities are different. But the point is, everybody has a chelik in Torah. Everybody's got that, you'll find, my chelik's not the same as your chelik. You know, kol echad v'echad makir is chelko. Everyone has to find his particular chelik in Torah. That's what this tefillah is. The part about the Beis HaMikdash, okay, you know, that it's interesting. I don't really have a good explanation why that would be stuck in here. But, you know, the notion of Sechel Kenabis or Secha, and I guess that's part of the phrase. Yehuda ben Tam may not have composed the Sihi Ratzon. And if he did, okay, you want to include something about a request to build the Beis HaMikdash, but I think the key is the Sechel Kenabis or Secha. Okay, that every person can find his chelik and Torah, and that's part of that statement. Then in the next Mishnah, Chaf Hei, Yehuda ben Tema continues Ruaya Omer. This is a very famous Mishnah which describes the different ages. Ben Chamish Shana Lamikra, a person is 5 years old, so that's the time to at the age of 5 years old, you should begin studying Mikra, begin studying Chumash, okay, Tanakh. Scripture, 10 years old Mishnah. All right, now it's interesting because that's not what we do. We don't follow this Mishnah. By the way, there's some question whether this Mishnah was actually authored by Yehuda ben Tamer or not. Just mentioned some say it belongs back in the other parak or is authored by the other parak of Shmuel HaKotan. But anyway, he's giving an age, you know, or a development age. One of the famous educational psychologists, Piaget, has a whole famous description of how children, how people's minds develop and what they can handle at certain ages. And Chomesh HaMikra, you can understand Psukim, you can understand Tanakh, and that's what a person should do. When you're 10 years old, you learn Mishnah. Mishnah means Halacha, right? And then it's not until the age of 15, but Chomesh HaSvele Gemara, Chomesh HaSvele Gemara, then you learn Gemara. Because the mind is not really developed. We don't follow that. The Maharal Prague made a big fuss about saying that people should follow this curriculum. I know the Reshechta thinks that it's correct. We don't do it, you know, before people have learned, they don't know about Mikra. You know, there's some place in Eretz Yisrael that do it. There's some yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael that started with this thing, and they follow this exact order, and they learn all of Tanakh from 5 to the age 4. We don't know any of Tanakh. We barely know the Chumash, you know, and then before people learn the basics of Mishnah, I mean, the basics of Halacha, they're already, you know, doing Pilpul and Gemara. Most children, there are geniuses, but most people, till the age of 15, that's confirmed by psychologists, don't really have the ability to understand the in-depth analysis that Gemara represents. That Gemara tells us, you know, that the Medama Milsalamilsalam to figure out Kasha. You know, the mind isn't developed. I'm not saying there aren't exceptions. I'm not saying some kids can't do it before, but as a general rule, you know, it's not till the age of 15. And, you know, it's just an interesting program, okay? Again, most people did not, did not follow it, not just in modern times. I mean, you know, perhaps something we should think about going back, but that's another discussion. It also mentions here, Ben Shoshay Mitzvahs, of course, that's the age of Mitzvahs, Bar Mitzvah. We have a tradition of Bar Mitzvah 13. Where does that come from exactly? It comes from this Mishnah. But where do they get that from? So there are different sources, but the Rosh writes, and others write, that it's in the category of Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai. All Shirim, you know, measurements and so on, Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai. So Ben Shoshay Mitzvahs is also Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai. There's a Remez and a Psukim, the Shimon and Levi, when they destroy the city of Shechem, it says Ish, right? Each one took, Ish, and they figure out that Shimon was 13 at the time. Okay, that they figure out the ages based on Psukim, so they see it's considered Ish, and many other things in the Mishnah. Ben Shmonas Ve'Lechope, okay, you can. It's an interesting Mishnah. Again. It's not telling you that you only can do these things at this age, but ultimately, every stage and every age in life has its value. And it's interesting that a person should retain what he got in the previous years and apply it to, you know, to each epoch that you're in. Okay, certain ages are more appropriate for other things, but it doesn't mean you lose the previous things. Soloveitchik once explained regarding the pasuk with Sarah Imenu at the beginning of Parshas Chayisara. It says we know that she was 100 years. Why does it say each time? Rashi is. Why does it say each time? 100 years, 20 years, 7 years. And so Rav pointed out that there are different, you know, there's value to a person being 100, right, having a tremendous amount of experience and tremendous amount of, life knowledge and things he's gained. The age of 20, so somebody has, the excitement of the whole life in front of you, a certain enthusiasm about approaching life. In the age of 7, there's a certain innocence and so on. You can make up your own or figure out your own midos to insert in each age, and Sarah combined them all. You know, She even when she was older, she had the wisdom of years, but she had the excitement of youth and she had the innocence. So this is, you know, in this Mishnah too, all these things a person can have in different ways. Of course, at the very end, the Mishnah says if a person is 100 years old, it's like you're dead already. You know, again, we say to 120, and very few people live to 100 years old, okay? And at that point is very, very difficult, but, you know, and very often a person does feel by the age of 100 years old, in modern times, certainly, again, people do live that age, but it's you know, a person is bottom in a olam. So, again, it doesn't mean automatically that that's the situation. And I think, again, it's a depressing way to end the Mishnah, because if a person wants long life and Arichas Yamim, so you want to be able to accomplish things even at that advanced age. But I think perhaps what the Mishnah might mean, Kilu Meis Arva Batam and Olam, not because you're so old, it's like you're dead, but rather that you don't have to worry about things anymore that others have to worry about. You know, sometimes you find the older person says something, they say, you know what, he can say it. It's all right. When you're 95, you can say that. It's okay. You don't have to worry about impressing people, about, you know, what's going to be and how people are going to react. You know, you reach the age of 100, it's like, you know, you're dead in the sense that it doesn't matter. You can, and I think you can accomplish, you can do. Maybe that's the point of the mission, not to end it on a bad note. Finally, the last mission, the Perek, Ben Bagberg, Omar, Hafachwa, Hafachwa, the Kulaba. Okay, the, you know, the famous Mishnah that you can look into the Torah, turn it inside out, go over and over again, you know, and find something. Everybody knows. The you know, the more you learn, the more you study, the more you see new insights every single time you open up. And that's the remarkable thing, actually, about the Chumash, about the Torah itself. Okay, and I've mentioned this example before. So I'll just go over because I want to finish this point on the mission. But I've mentioned this example before. You know, if you imagine going to a graduate class in English literature. Okay, you're in graduate school to get a PhD or whatever, a master's PhD in English literature. And the book they take out to show you is a Dr. Seuss book. That's your first reading assignment, right? That's how a kindergartner starts when they first how to read. You don't read that when you're in graduate school. You don't read the same book or some book, you know, I Want to Be a Fireman, you know, that's actually shaped in the shape of a fireman's hat. You know, these little books that you get for kids and so on. That's when you're given in your graduate, that's on your graduate school reading list. It's ridiculous. Okay, it would never happen, all right? Or in mathematics, you go to graduate school, the first problem the teacher puts on the board is 1 + 1, okay? It's idiotic. You'd never use a first grade arithmetic book for a graduate class in mathematics. However, it's fascinating. When it comes to Torah, the very same text that a first grader uses when he first starts to learn, that text, and that was when my grandchildren just started learning Bereishis, you know, that same text is studied by the greatest minds of the Gedolei Torah. It's the same text. It's the exact same text. The Gedolei Torah, Gadol Hador, takes out a Chumash and reads the exact pasuk that a five-year-old reads. There's no other discipline like that. And the answer is because it can be understood on so many different levels. It has infinite depth. Okay, and that's what the Kula, you look again, and you'll see something. Obviously, when a five-year-old reads the pasuk in Bereishis, he's very excited. He doesn't see the same thing that the great Talmud Chacham sees, or whatever the pasuk is, right? But it's the same exact text. It's a fascinating thing. As I said, you don't find that in with other texts. But that's the idea of Hafachwa, Hafachwa, the Kulaba. And the last statement of Ben Hehe, who exactly is Ben Bagwa, Ben Hehe, who they exactly are. Okay, there's also kind of perhaps they were converts, perhaps they were nicknames for somebody else. But anyway, at the very end, it says, Lefum Tzara Agra. Okay, we know that, right? Your reward depends upon your effort. And that's, you know that really sums up all of Pirkei Avos. And as we know, this is really the last Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, because Pirkei Avos in the Mishnayos has five prakim. And the sixth parak is really what's called Kinyan Torah, is not really a part of the Mishnayos. It's Brises, and it's important. You know, we'd like to go through it as well, because it's been attached to Pirkei Avos. But that's the end. And he says, you know, it's the way to end it. Lefum Tzara Agra. It's, you know, what do we say in English? No pain, no gain. Right, and a person wants to, or you know, no such thing as a free lunch. Whatever you get, you got, and we can come up with all kinds of, pithy phrases that people use to communicate the same idea. But Fum Tzara Agra, I think it's an interesting way to end the, to end the Masechta, because as I said, this is everything depends on what you put in, and it summarizes everything really that was set up until now. What you put in, that's what you get out, and nothing happens by itself. And that's, I think, where the you know, Hiranasi decided to end the mission with this point. I think it just includes pretty much everything we've discussed. Okay, we'll stop over here.